Hey, it's Paul here again. Just a quick reminder that today's episode is one of our very first episodes that we recorded and released, and it's before we started using immersive storytelling techniques like sound design and music and narration. Now, of course, the story itself is very powerful and very relevant to today, but if you enjoy those types of elements like sound design and narration and music, then make sure to listen to some of our newer content that we've released as well. And now, on to the show.
It was crushing. It was scary. And I remember seeing him with lots of tubes and lots of things hooked up to him. And my first response in that raw moment was, God, what are you doing?
I'm Paul Hastings, and you're listening to Compel. Real people telling true stories about God's compelling love working in their lives. You're listening to episode 15 of our podcast, which is the season finale of our first season. So if you want to know what we plan to do after completing this season, stick around after the interview. And if this is your first time joining us, then I'd encourage you to listen to our other episodes as well. You'll hear from a former abortion clinic owner, a death row evangelist, an NFL Super Bowl champion, the president of the Southern Baptist Convention of Texas, and many others, all of them sharing about God's compelling love shaping and transforming their lives. Today, you'll hear from Jason and Bethany Pilchard's very raw account of the journey that God took them on with the birth of their special needs son, Zach. Their faith has been tested in ways beyond belief, yet God has been faithful to give them the strength that they needed to ultimately thrive in excruciating circumstances. Well, I'm blessed to be here with Jason and Bethany Pilchard, and we're here sitting in the heart of Denver, Colorado. And Jason, you are the pastor here at Beth Eden Baptist Church. Can you just tell us a little about the church and then how you came here?
Sure. This year, Beth Eden is celebrating its 125th anniversary. So the church was established in 1893, and the senior pastor, Jim Efaw, who had been here for about 24 years, retired, and the church called me to be their pastor. So I have big shoes to fill.
Okay, that's great. That's great. And then Beth, you and I were talking earlier, and I think you mentioned you and Jason have been married for, was it 18 years?
Yes, coming up on 19 in December.
That's great. Can you tell us, how did you guys come to be together?
Sure. I grew up in Minnesota, and my family moved here to Colorado when I was a freshman in high school, and started coming to Beth Eden, the church and the school. And Jason and I met in the school and became good friends, dated a little bit in high school, and then dated through college more seriously.
Got it. Okay.
And got married shortly after Jason graduated, just the next day, actually, in December.
Wow.
Less than 24 hours after I finished up my last class. So.
Wow. Okay. I've never heard quite that.
So we had the rehearsal and the wedding on the same day.
Oh, my goodness. That's great. So let's step forward through time a little bit. So I know that definitely, you know, a lot of things have gone on in y'all's lives as a married couple. I know at first there were some things that happened. Can you, Jason, would you like to dive into that?
Sure. The bottom line was our first year of marriage was terrible. I was an assistant pastor at a church, and we were busy in ministry, and so it didn't seem like we ever seemed to get the time together that we wanted to have. I think I had an expectation that our marriage would work a lot better if Beth would just keep becoming a little bit more like me, instead of appreciating the beauty of how God had made her. And that was making a very unhealthy marriage. And so I think 8-10 months into our marriage, we both kind of thought it may not work. And we knew what that meant for of course, my ministry. I remember nights staying at the church late at night, working, but not really having anything to do, and knowing that it was just, I didn't really want to go home because we weren't functioning well together.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But God used some circumstances towards the end of that first year of our marriage to get my attention, to help me see how incredibly selfish I was being in the marriage. And as I began by God's grace to pursue a more faithful role as a loving husband, Beth responded to that, and we've been growing and enjoying our marriage more and more ever since then. So.
Yeah. Well, tell us about, you know, after that first year of marriage, what kind of happened in y'all's marriage after that?
When we first got married, we had wanted to have children, and it took us about 5 years before I ended up being pregnant. And so those early years when we weren't able to have children, was tough. But God allowed us to, for me to be pregnant, and we found out on a Monday.
And how did you feel?
Elated. My sister was pregnant at the same time. She was a few weeks ahead of me. And so I remember calling her two or three times that week and saying, "Jen, I feel this. Is this normal?" And she would say, "Yeah, I'm feeling this." And we were just so excited. We would have children together at the same time or similar times. And it was great. We found out I was pregnant on Monday. And on Friday, I lost our baby. And that was very difficult. It was like God was showing us something that we were praying for and we were so excited about. He was dangling it in front of our face, and then he pulled it away. And that was hard to understand at the time, why he would do that. But in his love, he was using that to reveal to me that my heart idol was just to be like all my other friends and have children. So by God allowing us to go through this miscarriage, he revealed what that heart idol was. And I was willing to give that up to him and say, "Okay, God, I will still serve you. I will still love you, even if you never give me a child." And within a couple months later, I was pregnant with Elijah, with our first son. And so I don't mean to say that God gives you what you want if you give it up first. He doesn't always necessarily do that. But in this case, he chose to bless us that way, and I'm very grateful.
Yeah, yeah. Jason, tell us about your first son, Elijah.
Because of some of our circumstances, we had a high-risk pregnancy, and so we got to go to the doctor like once a month, even more frequently than that, and see ultrasounds. And we were doing an ultrasound, and it was evident that it was a boy. And we were leaving the hospital that day, and Beth, we stepped into the elevator, and it was just the two of us, and she looks at me and she says, "You're glowing." And I was. And we were just so excited to have a little guy.
And so Elijah is now 12.
He's 12.
Yep. He's 12 years old. That's great. So then walk us forward through time. Tell us about after Elijah was born, you guys became pregnant again, right?
Yeah, so we wanted to have more children, so God blessed us. Beth was expecting again, and there really wasn't much about our second pregnancy that was really different from the first, and really everything had followed a pretty normal pattern, we went in fully expecting to leave in a few days, having had a very similar experience, and it was a very different experience with our second son. The moment he was delivered, it was evident that there were some substantial differences between him and his brother. He was very hairy. There were some abnormalities about his face. The first thing was he was having trouble breathing. And so, you know, there's that initial moment where the baby is handed to the mother, and there's that kind of bonding. Instead, they snatched him away and were doing all kinds of extra things that we hadn't seen before. And we were caught off guard by that, but still didn't have any reason to expect that there would be anything abnormal about him. Facebook had just kind of been introduced.
Yeah.
And so we posted a picture of our newborn on Facebook. My sister, who's a pediatrician, saw that, called my dad, and said, "How are Jason and Bethany?" And my dad said, "Well, you know, there's been some complications, but they seem to be doing okay." And she understood, just because of the visual markers of Zach, that there were some things that were going to be very, very different about him. And my dad tactfully kind of passed that on to me so that I could shepherd Beth through the process. And really, the next 3 or 4 months were kind of a blur. It was chaos. After that,
Beth, can you just take a moment here and describe to us what was it like there in the delivery room when Zachary was born?
It was tough. I wasn't at all expecting to have any issues with him. He had, with me being high risk, he had gone through several ultrasounds that were very, very thorough, and there was nothing that they could tell that would be alarming to them. And so we were very much expecting that he would be a typical child. And I remember they rushed him off to the NICU pretty quickly and ended up, you know, intubating him and all those things. And I remember he was born at very early in the morning. And I remember Jason being in the NICU. Of course, I couldn't go at that time. And he came back and pulled me into the bathroom, and he just said, "The doctors think that there's some significant challenges with Zach, and we don't know for sure at this time what that's going to look like." And I remember just bawling. And at first they thought it was Down syndrome that they were checking for. That was the first thing. And I thought, okay, I've seen other kids with Down syndrome. We could do this. And, but then we quickly realized that was not the case. And the doctors weren't even really sure at that point what to check for. It was crushing. It was scary. It was overwhelming. I didn't know how our lives were going to change. And the fear of the unknown was just overwhelming at that moment.
Yeah. As a teenager, I had so many friends whose lives were transformed by attending a Worldview Academy leadership camp. For many of them, it was the highlight of their summer because it was such a spiritually engaging experience. And today, Worldview Academy's mission continues. If you have a student between 13 to 18 and you care about equipping them with biblical truth so that they're prepared to stand firm and engage with the culture, then Worldview Academy is what you're looking for. Worldview Academy's week-long summer intensives cover topics in apologetics, servant leadership, and evangelism, all while building deep friendships with like-minded students. Your student will engage with 25 hours of interactive teaching, addressing questions like, how do I know that the Bible is true? Does God really exist? Who defines what is right or wrong? And what difference does that make in my life? Since 1996, over 42,000 students have called this one of the best weeks of their life. And with 18 summer intensives all across the country, there's certain to be one near you. Learn more and get 10% off your student's camp registration as a Compelled listener by using the promo code COMPELLED at worldview.org. Register for camp today at worldview.org while spots are still available. And remember to get 10% off using the promo code COMPELLED. If you like to stay up to date with current events, then you'll especially appreciate another podcast I enjoy called The World and Everything in It. It's a daily news program, about 30 minutes long, delivered every weekday morning by Christian journalists from around the world. And they aren't just rehashing the current headlines. They're actually doing investigative, boots-on-the-ground journalism while providing biblical cultural analysis. I started listening to their show about 5 years ago when we first launched Compelled. And since then, they've become one of my go-to sources for understanding current events from a biblical perspective. But they pull no punches. In fact, they tell the facts just as they are, even when it requires sharing uncomfortable truths. Maybe that's why they're one of Apple Podcasts' top 100 news programs. Join me and thousands of other Christians from around the world who listen to The World and Everything in It. Just search for The World and Everything in It in your podcast app or visit WNG.org.
And later that afternoon, I got to go to the NICU to see him for the first time. And I remember seeing him with lots of tubes and lots of things hooked up to him. And my first response in that raw moment was, God, what are you doing? Why? And I was just crushed. And it was a very, very tender moment for Jason and myself to see him in that situation.
Yeah. Jason, can you describe what the next 3 or 4 months looked like?
The diagnosis that they gave him initially was failure to thrive. Mm. What that meant practically was that he couldn't breathe for himself. He couldn't eat for himself. And they didn't know, and even for a few years after that, they didn't know what his life would really look like. So we had a million questions. Will he walk? Will he talk? Will he eat? Will he, you know, all kinds of things that normally are kind of assumed for children. We didn't know if he would do any of those things. I think one of the hardest parts, but one of the biggest blessings, was that God in his sovereignty allowed that period of uncertainty to last for years. Mm. Not days, not weeks, not months, years. And what that meant was we couldn't peg our hopes on any confidences that any doctors would give us.
Yeah.
Our hopes had to be hung on God alone. And we pray for that. We pray that God would grow our trust in him. We pray that God would allow us to lean into him and to love him. We pray for all of those things. But sometimes the answer comes in a way that's completely different than what we expected. And so, you know, just kind of fast forwarding, during those 3 months in the hospital, there were some things that were concluded that all of this was rooted in some kind of genetic disorder, but it didn't line up with any of the normal genetic disorders.
Yeah.
Actually, Zach is one in a million. He wasn't able to eat for himself, so he was given a feeding tube. He actually physically could accomplish eating, but he had some digestive problems that wouldn't allow him to take food, and so he got a feeding tube. And then we left the hospital with them offering us not even a ballpark estimate of what kind of cognitive ability he would have. And so it was mid-June of 2008 that we left the hospital, and we left only knowing a handful of things. Beth was going to be a kind of pioneer mom in her caring for Zach, because they could only tell us certain things that were absolute needs, but there were things that she was going to have to figure out that she wouldn't really be able to ask anybody about because his template was so different. Her days would be not only mothering, but figuring out how to mother like you were teaching somebody in a language that you weren't familiar with. So
can you describe for us what some of those examples might be?
So Zach would, he had a surgery where no air could come out. And so air would build up in his tummy, and that would cause pressure, making him to retch, which is kind of like a dry heave. He would do that sometimes 100, 200 times a day. Mm. Sometimes it was for hours at a time, nonstop. And the doctors, I would ask, how do I help him to stop retching? They would have no answers. And so there were many days at home where I would do anything I could think of to do to try to get him to stop retching, knowing that every time he retched, he could potentially undo his surgery and have to have it redone.
Oh, wow.
And he ended up having to have that initial surgery and then 3 redos of same surgery. Because he retched them out.
Oh, man.
And so there was that, you know, maternal instinct to protect my son, help him to stop retching, but yet I couldn't. And those were long, hard days of just trying to figure out, you know, if I turn him a certain way and kind of vent him, then maybe some of the retching will stop, and just trying to figure things like that out. And most of the time unsuccessfully. And that was, that was tough.
Yeah.
To not be able to, as a mother, your instinct is to help your children. I was doing everything I could to help, but it wasn't helping.
Yeah. What was it like for your marriage, you know, going in, there had been no warning signs at all of, you know, anything being abnormal or out of the place or out of the ordinary. And then suddenly, boom, now you're the parents of a special needs child. You know, what did that do to y'all's marriage?
The challenges with Zach were part of it, but another part of that was also the pressures of ministry, which didn't go away. So all of those things were kind of pressed, and the fact that we had a 2-year-old at the time who understood much less of this than we did. And he's trying to figure out, I have a brother, but he's not like everybody else's brothers. And so it was hard on our marriage, but then we could begin to see what God had been accomplishing for those many years before in driving our marriage commitment deep where it had been so weak at the beginning, and how we were going to need to lean into that. Every part of our marriage was difficult at that time when Zach was born. We were really teammates in trying to do ministry and to care for our children, and our marriage was only a very sliver of our existence. So the things that you normally think about as a young married couple, you know, fun activities together, maybe home improvement type things, all of those things were very much sidelined, and again, not for days or weeks, but for years. And I think Beth's idol may have been the hope of having children. I think my idol may have been a successful and satisfying marriage. And for a long season, that was really on pause. But yeah, the doctor told us, he says, you just need to be aware that in about 70% of marriages where there's an unexpected special needs child, it ends in divorce. And, you know, we had quietly contemplated divorce in our first year and had renewed a commitment to God's idea of marriage. And there have been times that have been hard, but our marriage has grown in this process. It's deeper. It's more full. You know, we wouldn't write our story. We wouldn't write our story any differently than we have. Obviously, there are things for Zach that we would like sometimes to be different, where he's just free from pain and free from the complications of his life, but there's nothing that we would do differently, and so God has been pleased to use these challenges to actually drive our marriage deeper.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just really encouraging to see that you guys have this endearing love for your son Zach, and I think it's also encouraging to just see that y'all aren't bitter at God for placing you in this circumstance. Shifting gears here, tell us about one of the medical breakthroughs that you've experienced in just the last few years.
So after the first few months until now, there were some really, really hard times with his digestive problems where we were leaning into every expert we could and they weren't giving us any solutions. And for the better part of 3 years, it wasn't at all uncommon for Zach to retch hundreds of times a day, which meant we saw our child in constant pain all day, every day, and often all night. And with just this maternal or paternal urgency of trying to relieve the pain and not being able to do it. So what that meant practically for all of us, our son Elijah has always slept pretty well through Zachy's challenges, but for probably 2 or 3 years, we almost never slept while we were kind of trying to tag team relieving him from his pain. So part of the story involved having to kind of overcome exhaustion in what seemed like a hopeless circumstance. And I say all that to say this, in God's goodness, we got connected with a GI doctor at Children's Hospital, who was fun-loving, who's ambitious, who's willing to try out-of-the-box type things. And he finally came to a suggestion of a regimen in helping Zach eliminate his food that finally gave Zach relief.
Wow.
And what that meant was we began to see this little guy who doesn't talk, who doesn't walk, who doesn't feed himself, who has a personality. And his personality is fun-loving. He loves to laugh. He loves silly things. He amuses himself. I think he actually takes a delight in amusing others.
Wow.
And we hadn't seen any of that. But now for probably the last 5 years or so, we wouldn't trade Zach for a quote-unquote normal kid. Mm. We find delight and joy in who he is that we just wouldn't want to replace.
Yeah.
So what God did then was brought us to a place where we could kind of exhale, and we knew how to manage Zach's care, and we have kind of built our life around his management, the management of his care. But when we're able to do that, we got our little guy.
Yeah.
Have you ever wondered why traditional math curriculums seem like they have a one-size-fits-all approach? Well, that's because they do. The curriculum writers are making assumptions about how quickly your child is progressing, even if your child is actually struggling with a concept, which, if left unchecked, can become a major hurdle to learning and hurt their confidence. That's one of the reasons why CTC Math exists. It's an adaptive online approach that automatically changes depending on your child's unique learning needs. By adapting to your student's pace, learning becomes not only more effective, but also more enjoyable. Can you imagine? No more tears about fractions. The interactive questions change in difficulty based on how your child is progressing, ensuring that they're challenged at the level that's right for them. Not too hard, not too easy. It's just like having a math tutor who knows exactly what they need when they need it. And as a parent, you'll love the detailed reports. You'll get to see their progress in real time and celebrate their victories and understand their challenges. Ready to give your child's math education a major boost? Just visit ctcmath.com and sign up for a free trial and experience firsthand how personalized learning can transform your child's approach to math. Again, that's ctcmath.com. You love Christian testimonies. Otherwise, you wouldn't be listening to Compelled. But imagine if you could enjoy compelled stories from Christians throughout the ages, including those who've already passed away. Well, that's what our friends at YWAM Publishing are doing through their Christian Heroes book series by retelling the incredible stories of Christians like George Mueller, a man of prayer who ran an orphanage for 10,000 children in England, who trusted God to miraculously provide food and shelter for those orphans, sometimes on a daily basis. Or Elizabeth Elliot, whose husband was murdered by the Aka tribe in Ecuador, but chose to forgive and move in with the tribe to share the gospel with them. Or Brother Andrew, who during the height of the Cold War smuggled Bibles to Christians behind the Iron Curtain, all under the noses of communist border guards who could have imprisoned him for life or worse. These are the types of stories that YWAM Publishing is printing. And their books are written for kids ages 10 and above, but frankly, adults love them too. They've published 50 of these biographies so far, and we just partnered with YWAM Publishing to bring you 5 of my favorite stories. These are the Christians that have inspired my faith and millions of others for decades, which include the 3 testimonies I just mentioned, as well as Corey Ten Boom and Amy Carmichael. We're calling it the Compelled Christian Heroes Bundle, and I actually worked with YWAM to select these 5 specific stories, and they agreed to drop the price in half just for Compelled listeners. So it's $30 and includes free U.S. shipping. To buy this bundle for yourself or to give to a friend, visit compelledpodcast.com/YWAM. That's the letters YWAM. compelledpodcast.com/YWAM. And trust me, if you love listening to stories on Compelled, you're going to love reading these stories too. For those that are listening, and again, I'm asking this in a delicate way.
Sure.
What is Zach's mental capacity? What could it be compared to? Like what age range?
I would say probably about a 4 to 6 month old, maybe up to 8 months. That's generally where he is at.
Sure.
He does understand different ways that we communicate with him. He loves personal touch. He loves people have rubbing his head.
Yeah.
He loves that. He enjoys holding hands or being able for him to kind of rub your hand. He loves that.
Yeah.
Things fairly typical of that age.
Yeah. Yeah. Does he recognize people? He recognizes the
yes.
two of y'all?
Yes. A really cute story. Just the other week, we were standing in line at a store waiting to pay for something, and all of a sudden we heard a mom say, "Hey, look, there's Zach." And we turned and looked, and Zach actually looked up because he heard his name, and he saw a girl in a wheelchair. This mom was with her daughter, who's also in a wheelchair, and Zach saw the girl and recognized her and started kind of giggling and getting antsy. He recognized her, and she was a friend of his from school.
Yeah.
And that was just such a neat moment for us to be able to see, without him saying anything, how he communicated, "Hey, it's good to see you."
Yeah. Could you share with us some of those experiences that y'all have been blessed by uniquely because of Zach?
There would be so many that it would be hard to really even communicate a fraction of them. One that may seem just really, really silly is our son Zach doesn't walk, and so because he doesn't walk, he plays with sanitized toys and things like that. He's 10, and his skin is like a newborn's skin. Hmm. And so, I mean, how many people get to kind of play with their 10-year-old's toes? Most kids would be averse to that.
Yeah.
But just like a newborn, you know, often parents will say, "I just wish we could pause this stage."
Yeah.
Well, in God's sovereignty, we paused at a stage of like 6 months. And so he giggles at us when we do silly things like a newborn would, and that just keeps going.
Yeah.
And so we don't long to revisit that stage. We get to actually experience it all the time. Two other things I would mention would be, one is all of the amazing, amazing caregivers that we've met. We have folks that are close, close personal friends that have nothing to do with our church, that we would have no other contact with, who have committed their entire lives to helping kids that aren't like other kids. And we see them as heroes. They're sometimes like oxygen to us in the way that they encourage us. And I think the third thing I would say that has been just such a wonderful blessing is, we're part of a church of about 400 people, and we hear this all the time. We still don't fully understand it, but they'll say, "You understand that Zach's not just yours, he's ours."
Hmm.
To have seen God bless us with a gift of a child that could be a blessing to an entire church body and could teach them lessons. I mean, we mean it when we say we still don't fully understand even what that means, but we see it, and we're grateful for that.
Jason, you obviously deal with people who bring some of the worst moments in their lives to you looking for counsel, right? They're dealing with massive amounts of suffering, yet you yourself are dealing with suffering at the same time. Were there ever times like early on after Zach's birth when you just turned to God and you said, "This is too much. I can't bear this. I can't deal with this anymore"? Was there ever a moment like that?
Yeah. In fact, there was a moment for Bethany and me together that was an early turning point in what the tone was going to look like for how we were going to face these challenges with Zach. It was when Zach was still only a few months old. He was still in the intensive care unit at Children's Hospital. I was on my way to the camp and had stopped in at the house to get some belongings and to head out, and Beth was there, and it just felt like we needed a few minutes. And so our thing is walking. We love walking together. We do it three or four times a week if we can. And so we decided to go on a walk, and there was a construction that was taking place near our house. They were putting in Denver's new light rail, first light rail line, and there were some old railroad tracks, and I can still remember exactly where we were crossing those railroad tracks. And we had come to the point where we both just said, we can't do it. We can't do it. And we kind of collectively remembered Paul in 2 Corinthians 12, where he acknowledged that he was weak and that that he needed God's grace and God's strength at work in his life. And he was going to confess that he would embrace his weakness and his inability as long as Christ would be magnified in his life.
Yeah.
And so we kind of took up for the next 6 months or a year, we took up the testimony of we can't, but God can. Mm. And that was a turning point for us. Was I think we had experienced enough of Zach's life that we had begun to take a can-do spirit, but God wanted us to understand that we couldn't do it alone. And that day, our hearts were working together, and we realized we're just not strong, and so we weren't going to be strong anymore. We were going to be weak, and we were going to let God's strength be what was evident to those around us and be our hope.
Yeah.
And we find that there are all kinds of good things that God does through pain that maybe he wouldn't do another way. Someone has said that pain is God's megaphone to us. Mm. And so we've just tried to learn that when we're hurting most, to listen well, because God is using that to draw us to himself and to refine us. And we should be blessed by that. We should be grateful for that.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that, Jason. Beth, is there anything that you'd like to add on to that in this concept of God using the suffering that you guys have experienced in a way that you can uniquely minister to others, perhaps?
I think one of the things that God really showed me through this process of having Zach was to learn how to help those who are themselves struggling, to be able to be empathetic with them, to say, hey, I may not understand exactly what you've been through, but I have suffered and I have hurt too, and God is there. He will help you through this. He will grow you through this, just as he did for myself. And I think that's a valuable lesson. Women like to know that they're not alone in their suffering, and to be able to come alongside a sister and say, God hasn't forgotten you. He loves you, and I do too. And let me walk through this with you as best as I can.
Yeah.
That's been something that has been taught to me by that God has taught to me, and I'm very grateful for that.
You know, in that same vein, I think there's this beautiful parallel that shouldn't be overlooked in how the same way that you guys care for Zach and that he's dependent on you for every need, similarly, God cares for us, and we must be dependent on him for every need. Can you speak to that?
One of the things that God has done in us in Zach's, through Zach's life, and even ministry tribulations, has allowed us to just kind of feed constantly on the own joy of our own salvation, and to make the gospel kind of like the fire in a home that's constantly warming our hearts where we would grow cold without it. So your question is exactly right, that there is always a parallel between what we're striving to do for Zachy and what God has already done for us in his son.
Thank you, Jason and Beth. We both appreciate your time.
Thank you for being willing to visit with us and give us an opportunity to share a little bit of this story. And we're excited about what God's doing through your program and giving people opportunities to hear how God works in people's life by simply telling their story.
The goodness of God is so evident in Jason and Bethany's story. He graciously tested their marriage early on to prepare them to withstand an unexpected special needs child, something that the majority of marriages don't survive. and he's given them endurance and joy beyond their own strength to walk through year after year of hardship. Their journey isn't over, but our God will be with them every step of the way. And that concludes season one of the Compelled Podcast. You know, when we launched our show 3 months ago, we really didn't know what the response would be like. But after just a few weeks, we were blown away by the reception. So from the bottom of my heart, let me just say thank you. Thank you for your encouraging emails, your comments, ratings, reviews, and more. And of course, you're probably wondering, will there be a second season? And if so, when? Well, the answer to both of your questions is, I'm not sure yet. You know, we've been prayerfully considering the possibility of doing a second season, and we really want to. And right now, we're actively seeking funding. So if you'd like to learn more, shoot me an email, paul@compelledpodcast.com. If you'd like to stay updated with our progress or be notified of when we plan to release our next season, sign up for our email list at compelledpodcast.com. You can find all the episodes of our podcast at our website or by subscribing to Compelled on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Overcast, and pretty much anywhere else you can find podcasts. Our show was edited by Zach Fowler, a gifted film editor, visual effects artist, and storyteller. You can find Zach and his work at zachfowlerimagery.com. Our logo was designed by Josiah Jost, an incredibly talented logo designer. You can reach Josiah and view his work at siadesign.com. Our website was created by Ben Billups, a digital developer extraordinaire. You can follow Ben on Instagram at ben.billups. Our media intern is Frank Allegrea. You can find him on Twitter at TheFrankAllegrea. Our assistant producer is none other than my lovely wife, Sarah Hastings. Without her, this podcast wouldn't exist. And that's it. I'm your host, Paul Hastings, and you've been listening to Compelled. We hope to be back again soon with another story of God's compelling love. One last thing before I go. If you'd like to meet up this year in 2024, I will actually be on the road for a few events, either speaking or exhibiting at some conferences. I am still nailing down all the details, but already I know that I'll be at the Texas Homeschool Convention in Fort Worth from April 18th through 20th, the other Texas Homeschool Convention in Houston from May 30th through June 1st, the Home Educators Association of Virginia Convention in Richmond from June 6th through 8th, and there's also the chance that I might be at some other events in Louisville, Kentucky and Nashville, Tennessee later in the year, but we haven't finalized those details yet. If you live near any of those locations, then I'd love to meet you. You can also see our latest up-to-date calendar of events at our website, compelledpodcast.com/events. And I hope to see you there.